Hi there, you're listening to a special Sundance / Slamdance edition of the Next Best Picture podcast. I'm your host, Will Mavity, and with me today I have Becca Richin.
Hello, good to be here.
We also have with us the director and the cast of the Slamdance hit, Funny Story. Everybody introduce yourselves.
You go, Emily.
Yes, I am Emily Bette Ricards. I play Kim in our film Funny Story here.
And I'm Matthew Glaive, and I play Walter in our film here.
And I'm Jana Winternitz, and I play Nick in Funny Story.
And I'm Michael Gallagher, I'm director of Funny Story.
And for those of you who can't see us, Michael just walked in the room, so welcome!
That's really weird for people watching, because it just started.
Down there.
Listen. All right, so this was a fantastic film. We both enjoyed watching it. I have to ask, I mean, the first question for you is, Michael, where did this come from? You've got a background in horror films. I mean, how did this come about in your mind?
Good question.
Well, you know, Steve Green and I, we have very twisted minds, I guess. And we had been working in genre space and, like, doing all kinds of different things. Because we love all stories. But we hadn't really done things that were kind of drawn from our lives and like people from our lives. Like we'd kind of just been making everything up. So we wanted to really ground it and bring it there. So I think it's just a lot of the kind of awkward family experiences that we've had. Not necessarily, it's not autobiographical in that sense, but the feelings of the people are inspired by real people.
Interesting. Yeah, I when we were watching, we were like, whoa, like, you know, a lot of this dialogue, like, seemed really authentic, and we could, you know, relate to it a lot, and then, we were like, oh my gosh, if this is pulled from real life, this scenario, that will be nuts.
So, my next one has to be for you, of course. Where on earth did you come to the character? It feels like a love child of William Shatner and George Clooney.
Wow. So, look at that.
I have to say, I thought it was George Clooney when you were on the screen at first. And I was like, there's no way. But you
really look like him. I don't know what to say.
Here's better half.
Well, I wanted to play.
I'm married to George Clooney.
This is just a little side note. That was my better half just behind the camera.
Not George Clooney.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, it's funny. I wasn't necessarily trying to channel George Clooney. And who else? And
Shatner.
William Shatner.
William Shatner. I was. How do you deal with that? I was thinking more along the lines of like Don Rickles and Carol Channing. But that might not even catch with the younger crowd. But
we did talk about the Shatner song, though.
The Shatner song.
The Shatner song.
Please sing it.
Shatner. Can you sing the Shatner song?
No, the Shatner song. Who does he do it with?
About his daughter.
The daughter.
There is a William Shatner song. And unfortunately, knowing like we're talking right off the bat, I don't know the name of it. But he has this song that he sort of, and I don't know why I'm blanking on the band that he plays with him, but he. He tells the story about meeting his daughter, and he goes, "Hey, it's been a while. Here we've been living only about 6 miles apart for the better part of 12 years, and he's never seen his daughter, but they live only like a couple of miles apart." And it's this whole talking song about, you know, so who are you dating now? And he's like, "Oh, it doesn't really matter. I don't want to, you know." But it's a horribly sad song. I sent it to you, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
But so that wasn't necessarily my inspiration. I didn't want to be the great William Shatner, even though I sent him a letter when I was in third grade.
Oh my
what
god!
What did your letter tap on
somebody? I clearly tapped into Shatner.
Everyone was writing a letter to President Nixon, and I sent a letter to William Shatner. Yeah, President Shatner, because of Star Trek. He never responded.
William Shatner, if you're listening right now, you dropped the ball. This is a travesty.
But it's not too late to respond.
Yeah.
Send that boy the letter.
So I guess that brings me, how did you decide to have a centaur, like Hercules style Battlestar Galactica combination? Tell me about the creation of.
I mean, we just love camp. We love camp. We can't get enough of it. And yeah, I think the, like, growing up, like, that's the stuff, like, that was on, you know? You'd come home from school and, you know, what do you want to watch? It's like, soap opera boring, you know, the news boring. Ooh, like centaurs and aliens and lizard women and like what is happening? I don't know, but I'm watching a 4-hour block and now I haven't done my homework and I'm failing school. So, but that was like, you know, like, what was it? The Adventures of Hercules and Xena Warrior Princess and all those fun
disappointed.
Things.
Disappointed! Remember that, right?
Yeah, yeah. We tried to get Matt to scream disappointed, but he had it in his contract. He wouldn't do that.
That's disappointing. I wasn't going to step on anybody else's toes.
Matt doesn't scream.
No, very, very leveled.
Yeah. We have our own sort of disappointed, which is his call, the call of Fagin's breath, which is...
Can you do the call of Fagin's breath?
I don't know if I can do that.
Yes.
Oh, you can.
You can't see it, but they can imagine
it. It's just for audio.
It is. Fagin!
And then we would echo it out in post, and then a dragon would come and destroy the bad guys.
God, it feels good to hear that again. Yeah. Oh, it's been a couple months and I feel lit up from that. Yeah, happy
that
morning.
That was pretty fantastic.
Feel safe again. Oh, I do. So safe in here.
I feel like we're leaving the two ladies in the room out a little bit. So,
cheers.
I guess I'll start with each of you. Tell us a little bit about prepping for your character. You both had very emotionally complex characters. And, I mean, you had to carry a lot of the emotional weight of the story on your shoulders. So tell me a little bit about what you did to get into character.
I'll tell you, I think, what was our first day?
It was when Matt shows up.
It was the meeting.
It was literally
the reveal.
The reveal.
The secret reveal.
It was all our first day.
That was our first day, which was quite magical. I think with this, this is more me, almost like this weird anxiety and like she's always uncomfortable. And I, for some reason, I'm not like that in my real life. And then I was just so easily able to feel uncomfortable for like 3 weeks. Like I was just like, she's uncomfortable. I guess I'll be uncomfortable. We did like a little bit of hair change, which always helps me just because when you look in the mirror, you look a little different. And sometimes when you just step into like wardrobe and that sort of thing. And I don't know, listen to different types of music on the ride up. We were always driving somewhere that was like a little bit further of a distance, which was, you know, you kind of turn your phone off and you just like zen in, get there. And we had such a beautiful crew and a beautiful team. And then, you know, you just step into sort of this self-destructive inside woman of a bomb. Like she's completely attacking herself 85 to 95% of the time.
Did you ever know what the letter from the mother said, or did you just kind of create something for yourself?
There was actually writing on the letter, and it's like it's a blackout for me, to be honest. But I remember reading it once. I didn't want to read it until we did our first take, and then I read it on our first take, and I was like just really sad. And then I was like, I won't read this unless we're shooting, because I didn't want to like desaturize.
So those tears were very authentic there at the end.
And it was all, you know, it was also like our last day. It was our last day of shooting, so there's kind of all this like goodbyes. We're always in this day of goodbyes, the day of like, you know, last drive, road trip movies, I always find have that sort of feeling anyways, because you're going through a huge transition and they're about, you know, driving to the next point or moving through your life in a way. And we were just sort of in this day of goodbyes and it was foggy and like kind of just this weird mellowed sadness and acceptance at the same time that day. It was a long time ago to tap back into the...
Yeah, I know.
I was like cutting it like...
So what about on your end? Tell us a little bit about developing your character.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the usual stuff of just breaking apart the script and going over it. And then I also actually, I did a big hair change. I chopped off all my hair.
Oh, you actually got a cut for the role.
I did, yes. Yeah, and wardrobe, everything, all the physical attributes just help kind of settle you in. And music is a big one for me as well, just kind of to get in the headspace. And then I think you do all the prep and then you show up on set. You work with great people and, you know, you're in the moment and you kind of work off. Like, Emily and I really, we had met once, a couple times before, but once over coffee about the project. And then we hadn't really chatted.
So funny because that was before we started shooting, too. So we're both in a different mind space.
Exactly.
And we're having these great conversations about this wonderful script. Get to shooting and it's like, you take on the character and you're sort of like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
I'm a different person now. Yeah.
But I remember like when you know, day one even, we just like went off and like talked for like hours about like.
Another interesting thing about Jana is aside from her role in the movie. She's also producing the movie. So here it is. It's an independent film, yes? So she's sitting here in wardrobe half the time if she's not shooting, writing checks to the crew and doing... You know, doing scheduling. And so she could, and watching her shift from, like, you know, the office right into there to doing the scenes is fantastic to watch.
That's incredible.
Different parts of the brain.
Okay, so we're obviously talking about, you know, we have two very strong women here, clearly. We have a producer here. And this is a film that chose to tackle LGBTQ issues. So I was curious, what were you hoping to add to the LGBTQ conversation with this film? What would you like people to take away from it?
I think I just wanted to you know, be authentic and to just treat it with love. And just the whole story is really about love. Like, mm-hmm. That's what it is. And it's about people trying to find it and you know, people who are afraid of it. And, you know, there's so many people in my life that have meant so much to me that are part of that community and people in my family. And so I think I just wanted to have a respectful story that represented them in just like a very, you know, direct way. You know, and we didn't want to make that the centerpiece of the movie either. Like, we didn't want to make it necessarily about that. It was really about these people that are going through something. And so, yeah, I think it was great. I mean, the whole cast was, I thought we had a great ensemble. It was just a great energy every day.
Amazing, like, group of women. Yeah. It was, not included.
Yes. So, what about the music choices there? When we got a off-key version of House of the Rising Sun, I was like, okay, I'm on board with this film. So how did you choose some of these songs in there?
Well, music, I think these kind of movies, you know, these like kind of indie road trip movies, like the music and the soundtrack, like they really just help bring you into the environment. And so, yeah, we, you know, there's some, you know, like we have Love and Spoonful song in there that opens the movie. And, you know, that's a band that just like, I think, kind of helps embody that sort of like 60s, you know, California road trip vibe that we wanted to set. And then we also had a song by Childish Gambino, Redbone, in there for the party scene, which I think, especially among millennials, has become like it's like the hip, cool, like party song.
The summer anthem.
And so I think to juxtapose, you know, Walter, who's this, you know, guy in his 50s, and he's like with all these young women who are like partying and doing all this. He's such a fish out of water. And I think it's just so funny to see this, you know, straight white male amongst all these like great, like powerful women. And he's just like, he is the odd one out and he is the weakest link. And it's, he's
that's your interpretation.
That's my interpretation. But no, it was a blast. No, and music, and then our composer Brandon Campbell, did the original score for the movie as well. And, we had a lot of influence in like ukulele and Hawaiian styles, because there's like a theme of going to Hawaii. Yeah. Hawaii being a place that like solves all your problems. It's like an oasis.
That credit song.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's very fitting.
When,
yeah.
When the ukuleles come into the end credits, that was a high point of the film. Would you like to ask him a couple questions?
So I really liked how you guys broke the film into three title cards and kind of, you know, broke it up that way. What was the thought process behind doing that?
Well, the movie's really just about, you know, three people. It's about Walter, it's about Kim, and it's about Nick. And so it just sort of naturally made sense that, you know, when you introduce each character and start following them, that they have that title card that just sort of sets the viewer up saying, like, okay, this is this person's perspective, and we're with them now. And what's interesting about it is you know, Jana's character, Nick, doesn't show up until like kind of the end of the first act, you know, in a big way. Like, we see her a little bit on the phone, but we're not really like fully knowing what's going on with her. So it was fun to kind of like unravel the mystery of these people and how they're connected and what's going on with them. So I think it helps to sort of set the viewer up for all the hilarious tragedy that comes later in the movie.
Yeah. I always love it because, you know, you start a movie and you think you know who the main character is, and you're like, this is who I'm going to follow. I'm going to really attach myself to this person, really care what happens to them. And then, whoa, all of a sudden, now it's Kimberly.
So tell us a little bit about designing this little escape lodge. Does this place exist, or is this you and your team put together? Because I kind of want to go there now.
It's a real place. It's, the movie takes place in Big Sur, but, you know, for logistics and, you know, production reasons, we actually ended up shooting in Topanga Canyon. Mm-hmm. And we found this amazing spot that actually had never been filmed in before. We found it on Airbnb, and it was it's like this oasis in the woods. And it was, it's all handcrafted. The homeowners, like, you know, worked in steel. They have all these, like, steel, like, architecture.
She's a local artist. She does exquisite. Oh, my God.
Exquisite.
Yeah.
And she really didn't want us to film there. And so it was, like, months of coaxing and bribing. And, you know, we were just obsessed with it. We found it online. We were, like, obsessed with this place.
It's like a character.
Has she seen it? Just interrupt.
She's seen bits. And so she's like, she was actually really happy with the shoot. She said we're welcome back anytime. So we didn't, you know, destroy it.
The whole cast, we wanted to stay there after, though.
Yeah, we
gotta
go there.
It's on Airbnb.
The TV is real too. There's a TV there.
Yes. Oh,
the TV was there.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
In the original script, we didn't have a TV. We found this place. We wrote the TV in the script.
it's so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, the backdrop. Yeah, as you mentioned in the film.
Okay, so you found this. Obviously, that saved a bit on production design. But tell us, you know, Slamdance is the home of indie films, small films. How did you guys get such impeccable production value? Because this looks like a multi-million dollar movie. I mean, tell us a little bit about running with this production and making a low-budget picture that looks so good.
Well, you know, we're so blessed to have such an amazing team. Yeah, thank you so much. You know, we have a company called Cinemand, and we've been working for 3 years. It's Jana Winchenitz, Michael Wormser, and myself. And, you know, we've just been coming together and we've kind of learned from the scrappy, you know, I came from YouTube and doing a YouTube channel and sketch comedy and things online, but our aim was always to elevate everything we were doing and like bring as much production value as possible to everything. And so as we started to do movies, we just built that team up. And so no matter what the project is, big, small, huge budget, small budget, like everybody kind of comes together for these things because they know even if this one is a smaller budget, then the next one will bring them on to the, you know, big commercial or big movie. So it's, you know, we got like kind of our A team to come together and make this thing. And everyone, you know, I think from just reading the script, like I think wanted to be a part of it because it wasn't a product that we were making. It was like telling a story that, you know, we wanted to connect with people and, it, you know, it came from the heart. So I think sometimes when you have that passion and you have like so much love that you want to share with people, like it can be infectious. And so everybody just kind of is like signs on and says, I'm in. So I think that was a huge benefit. But yeah,
and Michael has a partner in crime who Greg Cotton, mm-hmm. the DP, who has a fantastic eye, and on every break he's looking for something just to capture something, and he can read what Michael wants very quickly and adapt it and alter it a little bit, and they just read each other really well. He has a great eye. He's a really creative guy.
And you guys have a great relationship because you've done a bunch of movies together. Yeah. So that shorthand helps so much.
This is our third feature doing together. So
you worked on, what, Smiley with him?
No, we did a movie called Internet Famous, and then we also did The Thinning, and then Funny Story. So, and we've done some YouTube stuff as well.
Greg's amazing.
Incredible. Greg is great.
I do want to ask you, while we're on the YouTube train, what's next for you?
You know, we actually are working with YouTube Red on a thriller, so we're in development on that right now. And, just this movie has been such a labor of love. You know, it was like we willed it into existence. and so right now we're just excited to, you know, screen it at Slamdance and then, you know, kind of take it on the festival tour and show it to people and get it out there.
What else would the remaining three of you like to tell us about the film? What would you like people to take away from it?
I would like to ask you.
Yes.
Because we know what we feel about it because we did it, but I want to know what you watched and what you thought. Like,
how you feel.
I'm serious. Like, what? It's more exciting to actually hear how it affected you. You know, like you say, you know, who is Kim? And it's like, well, who do you think Kim? I mean, how did it affect you, you know? What is there things that like the way that the narrative kind of messed with you a little bit? Did you find that, you know, what did you guys think?
So I can say that there was a point in the film where I thought, I know exactly where this is going. About the third end of the third act, and then it just swerves completely. I think both of our jaws dropped when...
Yeah, well, I think we both got extremely invested in the relationships of the characters very quickly.
Yeah.
And we were commenting throughout the whole thing. We were like, are they going to hook up? Oh my gosh, that would be crazy. And I was like, no, there's no way. They're not going to hook up. I will be mad. I will be so mad if they hook up. That is so unfair to Nick.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, how dare you?
I know. the whole time.
Emily's like the best person ever, though. So if you see a movie and it's like, yeah.
I would. We were floored when it took that swerve and basically the two of them kissed. And so that was a jaw dropper. But I think it was a really, it was a film that left me, you know, emotionally raw is probably the term I would use. Because while it is very funny, there's a lot of humor, you know, you wreck everybody has, to some extent, somebody they went to college with who's Moon. Basically,
awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yes. We love
oh, okay.
Lily Holloman.
This is a
Lily Holloman's incredible.
Where did Moon come from?
Yeah,
I have to know.
I think just like you said, there's a lot of moons out there. A lot of people that, you know, I call them space cadets. They're just like floating in space, and maybe they took too much acid. Maybe they've had an ayahuasca trip, and they are just connected to the universe in a way we aren't. But they know things. I'm convinced that there are people that know things. And
just not these things.
Just not the social things between all of us. Yeah. But yeah, Lily Holloman plays
fantastic.
Moon River is incredible.
She's Lily Holloman is fantastic. Yeah. Moon was a standout for me. But yeah, it was a very funny film, but it left me emotionally raw. And I did like there's a lot of ambiguity. You know, I was wondering, because even there at the end, I don't want to spoil everything about the film, obviously, but I'm still not certain whether the final shot is exactly how it was perceived. Is that's deliberately ambiguous, I assume, or is that meant to be a pretty...
Yeah, I think it's always hard to talk around something.
When the spaceship shows up? Is that what we're talking
when
about?
When the aliens land.
Sorry, did I just...
Yeah.
The Call of Fagin's Breath, it's real, actually. Right. It's not
After the Great Robo War.
we see that Nick has three arms.
And she pulled
really helps her in her Olympic swim, which is the next movie.
Yes, no, you know, I think the kind of movies I come back to again and again are the ones that don't necessarily give you all of the answers. They leave it up to the viewer to fill in some of the blanks and to bring their own experiences to it. I think that was something we all kind of deliberately wanted to do and leave that room for the audience to participate. Because those are the movies that I go back to again and again and again. And so it was fun to... I think it wraps up. I think the movie wraps up. It's not a cliffhanger ending or anything.
But that's also why I like. That's also why I like whether it was only Michael or the two of you or whoever. The title of the movie is a great title of a movie because it doesn't mean that it's funny necessarily.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, funny story, and then they tell you a cringing story about something that happened with all these
something
moments.
Horrible.
It's a great title for a
funny haha
because you don't know. Yeah.
Do both of you feel like your characters have grown by the end of this film? Do you feel optimistic for where your characters are going to go once this film has ended?
I think the final opening of the letter for Kim was sort of her saying, like, I'm willing to take the next step, which I don't think she was throughout this entire film, or like the moments we've seen her in her life previously, because she's clearly been making these types of mistakes for a while, and then when we pick up with her, she makes a bunch that we get to actually see. And I hope that I can hope, because I don't know where she is now. And I hope that the opening of the letter was the acceptance to something greater. With that said, I believe she's been given the chance before and has still ended up here.
That's bleak.
Sorry. Yeah.
I think you're going to be okay.
I mean, I'm okay. I'm here with you.
I believe in Kim.
Kimberly.
And obviously, you're getting adored at CreatureCon, but...
Well, I think of it like... because we talked about the end of the movie and sort of the tone of it, right? And I thought... I like the same slightly ambiguity, but at least there's a feeling of a reprieve. Just by virtue of the fact that what unfolds, you know, that there's like a, we don't know, but it is what it is now. So, you know, I think there's, the word hope pops up again. So there's hope of a reprieve, you know.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our time here. I do want to ask, I've already asked Michael, of course, but I want to ask the rest of you, tell us what you're all working on next. We can start with...
I'm on a show called Arrow. We shoot till April. I believe... We're doing another season. Has been announced yet, but I believe we will be. If not, open prayer. And I have a couple things in the works for May and June that haven't been released yet, so you'll hear about those soon.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I'm sure you're joining the new Quentin Tarantino Star Trek. Am I right?
I'm not. I'm going to be in. I go to work in a couple of weeks on Damien Chazelle has a movie called First Man about Buzz Aldrin. So I'll be going to work on that. And I also will be finishing up on a show, Angie Tribeca, that I've been on. And also maybe continue with Better Things. I think they were. Better Things is a really great comedy. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Pam Adlon.
It's an anti-comedy. It's like, it is a crushing and brutal comedy.
Kind of like Funny Story.
It is. Yeah. It really is. It really is.
I think you have a type.
Yeah. So yeah.
And finally.
Awesome. And I'm actually collaborating with Michael Gallagher on this thriller for YouTube Red. And we're also back in the development mode. So we have a couple shows. We have a couple new features. So we're in, creation mode.
Yes. It's sleep/creation mode right now.
Yeah, hibernate.
I don't think there's a lot
create.
Of sleep happening at Slam.
No.
Let's be honest.
Let's be real.
Of course.
All right. This has been brought to you by a collaboration between the Next Best Picture podcast and Slam Dance, as well as Pierce Law Group. So, really quickly, any final thoughts from all of us?
I just want to say that I was so blessed to have such amazing actors to work with on this movie. I mean, Emily is, like, absolutely incredible. I think you showed a new side of yourself in this movie. I'm so excited for people to see it.
Your left side.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the left side.
She always works from the right.
Oh, yeah. It only shoots right. Contract only. I'm so grateful to be given the chance.
You took
a leap.
And same with Matt and Janet. Like, they're people that I've worked with before. And, in this role, we asked a lot to go deeper and really, go to an emotional place. And they both just absolutely nailed it. And, we're such a joy to work with every day. So it's wonderful.
And Michael and Jana are a power team.
Yeah.
They're only going to do bigger, great, great things because they're really solid. They know what they want, and they're open to where it could go as well. And they're just a great, it's an honor to be part of their story.
You can't see it, but there's tears from every
including the two hosts.
You guys are part of the family now, so you know how we work. We work the same people over and over. So
Love you guys. So.
Well, guys, thank you so much for your time. You can find me on Twitter at Mavericks Movies, and you can find the podcast at nextbestpicture.com, as well as at Next Best Picture on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much. Please go see Funny Story. It's here at Slam Dance. Starting on
today,
Sunday,
Sunday
the 21st.
Yes,
and then you'll be showing again
Wednesday, the 24th at 10:30 a.m. Correct.
Wednesday the 24th
at the Treasure Mountain Inn.
At the Treasure Mountain Inn. So keep an eye out for Michael Gallagher and his wonderful team, and keep an eye out for Funny Stories. Thank you so much, and thanks for listening.